I'm Dr. Kimberly Manning.
And this is Dr. Ashley McMullen. And you're listening to the Human Doctor Podcast, where we explore the human side of medicine, along with teaching, living, learning, and all things in between. Using the power of storytelling, conversation, and connectedness.
Hey, we're two dope academic internal medicine doctors, but we ain't your doctors. So if you perceive anything we say here as medical advice, no, it ain't that. Also, the things we say, they only reflect our brilliant Black woman magic mind and not our employers.
You could have been anywhere, y'all, but you chose to be here with us, and we appreciate you. Let's go. Man, have I missed seeing you on my screen.
Ah, I feel so wanted. Thank you. Very mutual.
Yes.
Very mutual. Hi, Mahalia. You look really crinkly and cute today.
Mahalia says thank you, because this was the first weekend in a long time that I actually did my own hair instead of paying someone else to do it.
Okay.
Yeah. So
we got that upper body workout, you know.
I know, right? It's like, I'm glad because I could ease myself back into it.
Oh, I love it. I absolutely love it.
Thank you. Very nice.
It's beautiful. All the different versions and facets of Mahalia, I'm here for them all.
Yes, me too. And we'd be remiss not to shout out Jules, you know, looking very beach chic, I would say.
She is beach chic. We're here at the beach, away for the week. So on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being amazing, mm-hmm. 1 being eh, I would like to know how you're doing at the moment. And what's an adjective to describe how you're doing at the moment?
Ooh, okay. I'm tempted to say 5. I'm going to say 4.8, because I feel like there's always a little bit of room for, you know, to achieve more amazingness in one's day. Okay. Joyful actually is the adjective that I would choose for a couple reasons, if I can just share briefly. Number one, I made it home just for a couple days back to Houston last weekend, and I was on the fence about, you know, making a very short trip. But within that time period, I just packed in like some good time with my family. I have like a very, just like a special relationship with my nephews. And I stayed at their house, like at my brother's house. And so being able to like wake up, play with them and just like have the day, it was really lovely. And I had some other relatives in town that I hadn't seen in a while. So that was great. Also, this NCAA tournament is really fun to watch.
Are you watching women's basketball or are you watching?
I mean,
are you watching both? Are you not? Are you being like non-discriminatory?
I'm watching both, you know, and I'm not one who like follows the tournament like passionately every year, but it's just been fun to dip in and out to some of these really great upsets. Like NC State has been really fun to watch. You know, University of Houston was in there for a minute. They got knocked out in the Sweet 16, but it was fun to watch that game in Houston when they beat A&M. And then, you know, the women's tournament, it's just fun to see these women get their flowers, like for all the BS that women's sports has had to deal with. You know, shout out to those girls at LSU, mm-hmm. Iowa, South Carolina, Dawn Staley. Like, mm-hmm. It's just really, yeah, it's a really exciting season.
I love it. You're a wonderful 4.8. I love that. I'm an appreciative 4.9.
Okay.
I like this idea of leaving space for something even better to come. I'm just feeling like really appreciative. I'm with my youngest son on spring break, and my oldest son is also on his spring break and came home a little early before I left town with my other son. Mm-hmm. And I just have some really great kids that I like as people who are very, very imperfect, still emerging as adults, but they're high integrity, good people. With my youngest son and 3 of his best friends that he's been friends with since kindergarten. A good number of the kids I've been bringing to the beach with me since like they were in the first grade or something like that.
Wow.
And I like that both of my kids have the capacity to have old friends, mm-hmm. sort of evolve with friends. I imagine these folks will be their friends, you know, for a long time. And that's always been one of my hopes for my kids, that they will be the kind of people that know how to be friends and know how to keep friends.
Mm-hmm.
That is not something everybody knows how to do.
Yes.
And then the other thing I'll tell you is that since the last time I talked to you, March 29th passed, and March 29th was the day that I met Harry. So that is a day that I'm always reflective, because I really, really firmly believe that, like, you can just wake up in the morning and your entire life can change for the better. People often talk about how your entire life can change by something awful happening. That is true. A catastrophe can happen to change your life for forever. But also, the same morning you wake up to can hold a whole, like, array of mercies that could completely, completely change the trajectory of your life.
Amen.
So March 29th was a day that, like, absolutely, completely, completely changed how I saw my life happening. And I'm more sharing that because I think that sometimes we just get so stuck into cause and effect and thinking, like, all right, I did this, I did this, I did this. This is not happening. This is not going to happen for me. And there are some things that can happen in your life that you cannot plan for. You can't set it all up. It's just going to happen. And those can be good things.
I love that.
So I'm focusing on those good things. Yeah.
Amazing. An appreciative 4.9 for some incredible reasons. Sometimes I struggle with elevating my joy and speaking out about it in the midst of so many unjust things that are happening around the world, both intentionally and unintentionally. For example, you know, the bridge destruction in Baltimore, and of course, the ongoing conflict in the Middle East and, you know, in Ukraine. And, you know, I think that where I fall is that, you know, as human beings, we have the capacity and I think the responsibility to, where we can, make space for both joy while also advocating for justice. And that's something I want to put out in the world. Another joyful thing is that I'm realizing I'm going to see you both in April, in a week, when you come to speak at UCSF. And then I'm going to see you in May, because we're both going to be in Boston at the Society of General Internal Medicine, where Dr. Manning and I will be recording our podcast live.
And then we're also presenting.
Yes.
We will be in Boston, large and in charge. And we are extraordinarily excited about that.
Amen. Yes. See y'all there.
Okay, kings, queens, and non-binary royalty, y'all. Today, I'm telling you from the beach that, in addition to the sun that is shining where I am, the sun had just got a little bit brighter. Why? Because you, my friends, are about to have your ears dazzled by a story from none other than the matchless, wonderful 4.8, Ashley McMullen.
Man. Yay.
Yes. Y'all like to edit out my applause. I want y'all to know. So I'm going to do this again. Yeah. I noticed that. I was like, should be editing out my applause.
You're right. I mean, my bad. My bad.
So, my sister from another mister, what is the what today?
The what for today from also sunny Oakland, California is revelation.
Ooh, revelation. Good word.
Yes. Best believe I've been trying to do my homework, because now that I know that Jolie is keeping tallies, we
shout out to Jolie.
Yes. I was like, let me bust out the thesaurus before I, you know.
Revelation. I love it. I love it. What comes to mind is the Alvin Ailey Dance Theater finale. The finale is revelation. And it's this iconic choreographed dance that the Alvin Ailey Dance Theater does. So if you're not familiar with that, Google Alvin Ailey Revelation, and you will have your mind blown by some amazing, beautiful bodies dancing.
Amazing.
But I'm sure that's not what you're about to say.
Yeah, right. I was like, well, that dovetails in perfectly. And actually, no. But I will have to check that out for sure. But my revelation in the context of this story is more around kind of like discovering something new, something that really kind of changes and shapes your trajectory. And so before I start, I have to give credit and a shout out to Charlie Varon, who is a longtime listener, friend, and mentor to me, just in all things creative arts, who tapped me to tell this story last summer at the Or Shalom congregation in San Francisco. So it was a really cool opportunity to get back on a stage and do some live storytelling. This story is one that I hold near and dear to my heart. It takes place my senior year of college back at Trinity University in San Antonio, small liberal arts school. And this was, yeah, it was the last semester of my senior year. So this would have been in 2006. I had spent a kind of like both awesome and a kind of unexpected change of plans in my fall semester of senior year, in which I had taken some time to complete a research fellowship that I had to do some work out on the East Coast at Harvard University. At that time, I was still someone who was both deeply closeted, very much trying to kind of get in where I fit in. And, you know, these types of, you know, surface level accolades were the things that I was kind of holding on to in order to feel more self-esteem, you know, and that doesn't take away from the merit and the work that was done. I was awarded that fellowship because I was qualified for it, but that's what it meant to me at that time. Of course, you know, I arrived back on campus. I was late to register for classes. I was just trying to cobble together whatever credits I needed to graduate on time. And one of the credits I was missing was like a senior level kind of seminar class. These are like the small group classes where you take on like an advanced topic. And for a liberal arts education, it needed to be within a certain category. And one of those could be religion. One of the courses that was available was an advanced seminar in Jewish studies. I showed up first day of the seminar, and I'm one of, I don't know, maybe like six students of those there. I'm definitely the only science major, the only Black woman, and also one of a few who didn't identify as Jewish. You know, apart from being kind of introduced to the culture through my friend, I didn't really know a ton about what this course is going to be about. You know, I kind of found myself feeling like a little bit of a fish out of water, but, you know, I needed the course to graduate. So I was going to do my best. So the professor actually was a youngish guy, really cool, really nice. But, you know, he was very interested in kind of exploring more like modern contemporary topics within the Jewish faith. And one of them in particular that he was interested in having us explore was thoughts on homosexuality. And so granted, at this time, I wasn't just closeted. I was very much not even in the space of being able to process, let alone name some of the feelings that I had in terms of same-sex attraction. All I knew was that for me, like, you know, it was wrong. Like, there's no way that I could live a life in which I was able to feel comfortable and aligned with some of those, you know, deeper parts of me. It was very much still shrouded in fear and shame, which is something I've been open about on the podcast. But, you know, at this point in my life, I'd never even like voiced those feelings out loud and still couldn't really name them.
So had you voiced them out loud to yourself?
No. Well, actually, I take that back. I think on some level I knew, but I was still in the space where it's just like, oh, you just have to control it. You just have to find the right partner or like the right circumstance. I really had embodied this notion that it was just wrong. In the classroom one day, we had to watch this documentary. And I forgot the name of it. I'll talk to Katie. We'll find it and put it in the show notes. This really powerful documentary that was basically interviewing individuals in like one of the most conservative sects of Judaism. I remember sitting there and they were interviewing this woman and her image was blurred to help protect her identity. And she talked about basically the feelings that she was having, like the way that same-sex attraction would occur and the conflicts that it would create within her body and how it made her feel. And literally what she was doing was saying out loud everything that I had been feeling. I wish I could say like, you know, it was moving and liberating, but all it did was just make me really deeply afraid because I was just like, oh, is this what this means? This is never going to go away. Mm. So as we get towards the end of the semester, one of our like main projects for the seminar is that, you know, we were to split up into three groups and each of the groups would really kind of immerse yourself in a different Jewish community, spanning from more progressive to more conservative. And the group that I was in was right in the middle, maybe a little bit more right of center, synagogue and community. One of the things that we had to do in order to complete the assignment was to have like a dedicated interview with the rabbi of that church, or sorry, of that synagogue. And among the many questions that we were to ask, we were specifically told to ask, would this rabbi agree to oversee a same-sex wedding for members of their congregation? And like, what were their thoughts around that? I mean, now that I'm looking back on it now, I was like, okay, clearly like our professor like had some motives here.
Doing the research for.
I know, it's just like, what is happening? Like, can we, you know, he was very clear. Like, there's a lot, obviously more to learn and explore, but you know, that topic in particular, and again, mind you, this is 2006. Even if it's within this millennium, like we're still not quite as progressed in our mindset at that point.
Right.
We get to our interview, and I think I volunteered myself as scribe, so I was, you know, I wasn't doing any of the talking, but I remember walking into this rabbi's office, who was super kind, but very like an imposing, tall, kind of authoritative religious figure. He had like a big office with all like the accolades, the bookshelves, the mahogany desk, and you know, we're just like this group of students who were sitting in front of him, like, you know, told to do an assignment. And you know, we get to the part where we ask the question about this rabbi's views on same-sex marriage. And again, like this is one of the more conservative synagogues. And so we ask the question, Rabbi, you know, if two members of your congregation who are of the same sex approached you to ask you to officiate their wedding ceremony, like what would be your response? And he kind of leaned back in his chair, and you can tell he was really kind of considering it. You know, within the bounds of, you know, that particular congregation, you know, the answer should have been an easy no, like that's not. But he thought about it and he was just like, you know, there are some constraints here in terms of our bylaws. And so, you know, I don't know that I could do that, but what I would do is I would make sure that I find them a rabbi who would, and I would be sitting on the front row of that ceremony. And he went even further and talked about actually his daughter, who had been born with some differences in her abilities. I don't remember exactly what her condition was, but he talked about how much he loved his daughter and how, you know, he just like made it plain. He's just like, you know, she's just different. It doesn't make her any more or less human. It just is what it is. For whatever reason, the way he put it in those terms, it was like a revelation for me. He was basically saying, like, there's nothing wrong. Like, it's just, there's just, people are just different. You know, again, it wasn't like this kind of earth-shattering, like, commentary or, you know, this eloquent soliloquy. He was basically framing it as just like, this is just who she is. And for folks who have same-sex marriages or same-sex attraction or anywhere on the se sexual spectrum, like, that's just who they are. I walked out of the synagogue and it was just like something ruptured. Like, there's nothing wrong with me. Like, I don't have to keep hiding this. And like, I went from being afraid to actually being like angry. And I, you know, I wasn't like, great, I'm free. Like, I'm out. Like, you know, as many folks will tell you, like, this is a process and it was a process for me, but this was the very, very beginning of it for me, thanks to this rabbi. And actually, I think this was a couple of days later. I ended up on the phone with my mom. It was just like some random afternoon. You know, we started talking about something unrelated, but somehow we veered into the topic of me kind of recounting this conversation I had with the rabbi. And as I'm like talking about it, I feel myself getting like activated and kind of revved up again. Because like up to that point, my mom was also steeped in conservative Christian mindsets around same-sex marriage, and I really didn't think that that was something that she would accept, even in me. We were on the phone, and I was just like, you know what? Like, I had this conversation with the rabbi, and he said this, and he said it was okay, and you know what? I believe him. And like, you know, it was just like, before I even knew what was happening, I was just like kind of offloading some of
Basically
that
telling you.
frustration. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know I was, but I was. And she was quiet for a moment. And then she finally spoke and she was just like, Ashley, is this something that you're struggling with? Is that what you're trying to tell me? And then I immediately clammed up. And then she was just like, you know, you don't have to struggle with this alone. Like, I'm still here for you. Hearing her say those words, that was like, it was like the key that finally turned the lock and allowed me to start this journey, which would still take a couple years, to know that I could be myself and still be loved, especially by, you know, the people who I need the most in my life. And I'm so grateful that I was late to register for classes and that I took this class. Like, you know, I imagine it would have happened eventually, of course, but, you know, at that time as a or soon to be college graduate, you know, perhaps a little bit of a late bloomer by today's standards, but it really allowed me to go into my emerging adulthood and professional identity with eyes wide open in terms of where are the spaces where I can continue to practice being myself.
I love that. I love that something as simple as something you heard somebody say in a kind of a learning setting could be a pivot point for you. You know, if anything, it makes me realize the enormous responsibility we have with young minds around us, right? That, you know, Jay-Z says streets is watching. but you know, that's true, right? So here you are, this young person tasked with asking this question, and this person doesn't know who you are, doesn't know anything about your backstory. But he was responsible in how he shared his truth, right? And that's really very powerful. Because what you heard that day, it could have kept you, you know, with your feelings close to the chest for another 10 years.
Absolutely.
And, you know, even if you are a person who has enough support or who feels, you know, safe enough to let the world see exactly who you are, you still have to deal with a lot of stigma. Right. And, you know, I think in all relationships, people have an idea of who you are. And then when you don't become that, they have to reconcile that and forgive you for it.
Absolutely.
Right. And that is as a parent, that is as a partner. That's even as a friend, you know, where friendships evolve, right? Like even when I was saying my son has old friends, who he was in the first grade is not who he is in the 11th grade. And, you know, who I was in 2002 when I met Harry is not who I am now. And every day there's just like a piece of that person that you're like, wait a minute, this isn't what I signed up for. This isn't, you know, what it was supposed to be. No, wait a minute. My kid is supposed to be an honor student, valedictorian, and then go to medical school. My kid is supposed to fall in love with a man who also loves Jesus. They are to get married, and then they are to have 2.5 kids and live near me so that I can like help raise said kids. And when something detours from that and you have to kind of revise your vision, that's hard. But not nearly as hard as having to do it for yourself.
Absolutely.
Right.
Man. Yeah. Kimberly, I mean, you basically like summarized that perfectly. And you know, and I'm really grateful in the sense that I don't feel like my mom ever outwardly put any type of pressure on me to try to specifically be a type of person, but I did feel somehow that I would be disappointing her if I didn't follow this particular path, because, you know, to that extent, I was kind of on my way to medical school. I kind of, you know, felt like I was becoming someone that, you know, was really going to be a source of pride for my family. And I felt like this was going to diminish that. And obviously that was not the case, but, you know, it was something that definitely played a factor in what was going to be the impact on my family if, you know, this part of me becomes reality.
Yeah, and I will say, I have the advantage of being a parent, right? And a parent of emerging adults, which is pretty much not that far in age from where you were at that time. And what I realize that one of the reasons why parents hold so tightly to ideas of who you are is that they just want your life to be easy. Now, there is a selfish component because if your life is easy, that makes my life easier too. And realize that, right? Like if you are a high achiever and every option is available to you for your next step, that makes it easier for us, right? The whole world does not have a horrible stereotype of who you are, and you don't have to walk through a crowd of people holding signs saying that you're gonna burn forever. Parents just hate the thought of anything bringing pain to their kids or something that's really hard. But again, if you live long enough, you realize that the thought of your child not being able to be their entire selves for a prolonged period of time, that is a horrifying thought to me. That's a horrifying thought to me. That just, to me, that the fact that you even had the kind of relationship with your mom where you could say that to her is actually really, really dope. And that your mom was of an age and had the capacity to receive what you were saying. I do recall that it was a little different when you spoke to your grandparents, but they are of a generation where that was not really a, that just somebody sort of openly being a person who's same gender loving is just not something that people got to do and live a happy life at the same time, with few exceptions, right? Sure, there are some exceptions, don't add me. But yeah, like it's hard being a parent, but if you love your kid, you want your kid to be whole and to be at peace.
I was going to clarify. I was like, I didn't know I could have that conversation with my mom at the time. Like, it came out of me, and I tried to scoop it right back in, but you know, she showed up in a way that I really, really deeply needed. It also moved her to change a lot of her beliefs and ideas. And I really love my mom for that. And it's just another reminder of, like, you know, not all the time, but sometimes people can change. And love is often a catalyst for folks to do so.
Oh, for sure. And I actually think people can change. I think the part that's more rare is that people don't want to change. To change requires work, right? So, like, you can learn how to walk on your hands if you keep trying at it over and over and do whatever you got to do to figure that out, if indeed you have like the physical capability, right? But if you have the physical capability to do something, you probably can. You just have to decide. And deciding things as you get older is hard, especially when all of the things surrounding you support your old thinking. Right, because it's like when we're talking of our patients about quitting smoking and everybody around you smokes cigarettes. People, places, things, right? But the same goes to like narrow thoughts about things. There's some parts of how the world has evolved that I'm like, I'm over how the world has evolved on this, right? But something I'm very, very happy about is that there are people who are very young who know exactly who they are and get to be that from the start. They don't have to spend some like inordinate amount of time confused about who they are, or even a space to be discovering, right? Like I've even, I have friends who have children who say, like, yeah, my daughter thinks she identifies as queer, but she's not sure what that means to her yet. And she's just sort of sorting it out. She doesn't think she is on a, cishet binary type situation, but she's only 12, so she doesn't know. And I'm like, the fact that you got that language, I mean, at 12, all I knew is that sometimes I had butterflies when I stood next to this person. Like, I don't know what this is. But yeah, it's a good evolution.
I'm here for that. And I love the fact that, you know, we are are less co-opted by binaries. Like it's either this or that. Like, guess what? It can be both Easter and a transgender day of visibility. You can be queer and still have a relationship with whatever divine presence you believe in.
You can have bad things happen in the world and you can be a wonderful 4.8 or an appreciative 4.9 at the same time.
Yes.
Joy and pain are like sunshine and rain,
mm-hmm.
right? Over and over, you can be sure there will be showers, but you will endure.
Mm.
Where there's the flowers, there's the sun and the rain. Oh, but it's wonderful. They're both one and the same.
Mm.
Shout out to Frankie Beverly, who just had his final tour
hey.
Around the United States.
I love that.
Joy and pain, like sunshine.
You know, I feel like after this conversation, can I be like a 4.99 now? Like,
you can be a five.
Yes. Okay. I'm a five.
You can be a five. You can be a five. It's okay to be a five.
All right. I'm a 5 out of 5 now.
There you go. I love it.
Well, I appreciate you carving out some time from your beach vacay to
come chat. Yeah, this is a wellness activity for me. So this is not work. This is a priority. So I'm glad to be here.
Likewise.
All right, sis. I love you.
All right. Love you too. See you very soon. That wraps up this week's episode of the Human Doctor Podcast.
Special thanks to our favorite brother gastroenterologist, Dr. Chuma Obiname, for the beats. Shout out to the Dr. Ashley McMullen for editing and production.
Mad love to our podcast family at The Nocturnist and The Clinical Problem Solvers, our Med Twitter fam.
And especially shout out to all of you, our listeners.
Until next week, remember,
we see you and you are enough. Holla!